All right, let's turn our attention to the NFL draft and NFL storylines. Mark Schlereth, kind enough to join us, longtime NFL offensive lineman, one of the best to ever do it. You see him on Fox Sports, calling games, as well as on the radio in Denver. Had an interesting quote that I saw earlier today that concerning Zach Wilson, and I reached out to Lloyd, said, we got to get Mark on because this was fascinating. Mark, kind enough again to join us. Mark, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, guys, man. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
So good to
talk to you. We're doing well. Obviously, with BYU in our backyard, everybody's looking at Zach Wilson in this fresh new situation he's in Denver. I love the quote you had earlier today that your station tweeted out about how, look, you know what? If Denver needs a quarterback, instead of using that first round number 12 pick or using draft capital to move up into the top three or four, you think Zach Wilson's on par with any quarterback in the draft right now?
Well, sure. He's been through the learning curve. You know, from a talent standpoint, and here's what I'll tell you, like sitting around and talking to coaches and talking to, you know, general managers and people who do this for a living, I had a long conversation with Kyle Shanahan, and it was just about the draft in general. And this is what he said to me. He goes, you know, beyond arm talent and athleticism, there's not a whole lot you can tell about these quarterbacks. The college system is so incredibly different, and I could go on and on and on about the fact that, you know, your base personnel in college is four wides. You never get into four wides in the NFL. Maybe at the end of a game when you're throwing a Hail Mary. Beyond that, you're never, ever. I can count on one hand in 12 years of starting in the National Football League how many times I was in four wide personnel. You just don't get in it. And it's endemic, and it's part and parcel of the way football and football players are brought up. It's the seven-on-seven leagues. So that's what they develop. They develop wide receivers. So that's what colleges use. That's their base personnel. You don't use it in the NFL. It's a very static formation because you don't huddle. You don't call plays. So you get into 3-by-1 or 4-by-1 or 3-by-2 formations, and you just stand there. There's very little motion. If you motion, you short motion on one side, but you don't change strengths. You don't change formations. You don't use, you know, multiple personnel groupings like two tight end sets or three tight end sets or two back sets. You just don't. And so there are so many things that are different. The other thing you don't do in professional football is look to the sideline where they have a picture of a barn, a chicken, and a rooster. And you go, barn, chicken, rooster, let's go. Like, no, you got to call plays, and you got to huddle up, and you got to get under center. And I could go on and on. I can't stand college football because it's not the same. The other part of the game that's different is the hash marks are super wide. So the college football game is played outside the outside the numbers. That's where they line up. That's where they play. Professional football is played in the middle of the football field. So, you know, for people to say you just got to grab one. Just grab a guy in the first round. It doesn't matter who it is. Like, it's the dumbest strategy that I have ever heard. And to sit there and think that one of these guys, if you move up, if you're Denver and you're sitting at 12 and you move up to 4, that you're going to get one that's ready to play in the NFL, I think you're high. I think it's stupid. So at least Zach Wilson's got all the talent that all these other guys have, but he's gone through the growing pains, and he's been coached in the NFL and probably coached poorly in the NFL. I think that's the other dirty little secret of the NFL. Everybody thinks you get to the NFL and it's all these great coaches. There are a lot of terrible coaches that coach in the NFL. There are a lot of terrible, you know, thought processes and schemes and, you know, and play calling in the NFL. And so, like, at least you've gone through that. And I don't know what he's going to be, and he hasn't been very good to this point, but from a talent standpoint, the guy's ridiculous. He's ridiculously talented.
And Mark, at the NFL level, how critical is it that a quarterback have that offensive front, just that line that protects him? You know, I'm just curious, in your opinion, where Zach was with the Jets as compared to where he will be, how much does that front matter for that quarterback production?
You know, it's interesting. It matters a ton, obviously, your ability to run the ball and all those things. But it's really how you sequence and call plays. You know, there are some offensive coordinators, and I go back to my coaching point, there's some offensive coordinators that call plays. And then there's other offensive coordinators that call an offense. And you have to have a global perspective of what you're trying to do. For instance, if I sit back and drop back in five-step drops consistently, five-step drops that have hitches, and I throw it 42 times during the course of a game, we're giving up a bunch of sacks. We'll give up six sacks. And the general fan and the general analyst on TV will say, wow, this offensive line really struggled. This offensive line stinks. And I say, no, your play caller sucks. What you're doing is you're asking guys to drop back 45 times. The key to pass protection is eliminating one-on-ones. That's number one. And then number two is giving your guys an opportunity to change sets and change things up and to keep the defense off balance. I always, when I consult with football teams, I always talk about taking the passive out of pass protection. So if we're throwing it 40 times, you know, can I get us down to about 12 reps where we have to actually pass pro? So, you know, I'm throwing four or five bubble screens. I'm throwing five bubble screens. I'm throwing, you know, quick game. I'm throwing 10 three-step drops. I'm throwing another five-step drops without hitches. I'm throwing four or five screens. You know, I've already whittled down to 20 reps. Now I just got to find five other, the all goes and some other things that I do in the passing game that gets the ball out quick. Now all of a sudden I'm down to 12 to 15 times where my offensive line has to hold up. I throw a couple of boot keep games, right? I throw four or five boot keep games in there. I throw a play pass, which is a seven-step drop, but we're keeping seven guys in and it's off of play action. Now all of a sudden I've whittled it down to 10 times where my guys have to hold up. Hey, now if in 10 times my guys give up seven sacks, then we really suck. But if we give up, you know, six, seven sacks and you don't do that for your offensive line, you don't marry your run game with that pass pro and with your play action stuff, then you stink as an offensive coordinator. So, and there's a lot of people who stink as offensive play callers.
Yep.
So, my guy Hans here played in the NFL. You had such a tremendous run in the NFL as well. And I'm curious to know, as a guy that did not even remotely come close to playing at that level, do you worry about confidence, especially at that position, when you got ran through the mud on the field and off the field by New York and a bad coaching staff and a media that just ran every personal detail of your life through the mud? Can guys get broken, and can sometimes guys not come back from something like that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it just depends on how you're made up. And the other thing is if you're able, and, you know, we live in a society where there are very few people that are able to actually take responsibility, right? You know, one of the things they always do, and the cliches in the NFL is the best ability is availability. You know, you've heard that, and that's baloney. The best ability is responsibility. Take responsibility for what your actions are. And so if he can take responsibility for where he is from the standpoint of maturity and the things that he didn't do well, then you've got a chance to overcome some of that stuff, because you'll be coached in a different manner. You'll be coached hard by Sean Payton and his staff, but also you'll be educated on what we're trying to do. And I'll tell you, man, there's no – like the passing game, there are no new route combinations. You know, that hasn't changed in 30 years. But it's how you coach them, the nuance of coaching them. That's what makes the difference, the nuance of leverage and how you're going through a progression, what you're looking for, who you're attacking on the defensive side, who we're putting in conflict, and where you want to throw the ball based upon that guy's movements off of conflict. There's so much stuff that goes into it. And let's face it, like, not all coaches are you know, created equal. So if you can take responsibility for the stuff that you did that derailed your career, and own that stuff, and then be open to learning, can you rectify it? Certainly you've got the talent, and I'm assuming you have the intelligence to do it. So, yes, can you overcome all those things? Certainly you can, and can it ruin you? Yeah, it can ruin you too. It's a tough business, and anyone who's ever played in the National Football League has their ass kicked. I mean, flat out had your ass kicked, and I've been there, and it's hard to scrape yourself back up and go, all right, that was a lesson. One of the things I always say is, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. And if you can grasp that and understand it and start being a professional, well, then you've got a chance to rectify kind of what has gone wrong to this point.
Speaking of things going wrong, Mark, whose fault was it that Russell Wilson and Sean Payton didn't work? And whose fault is it that Russell Wilson and his time in Denver was such an epic failure?
Well, I mean, I'll go back to the responsibility. You know, it's one thing. Like, you've got to understand what your strengths are and you also have to be realistic about what your weaknesses are. And Russell's got a bunch of things he doesn't do well. And, you know, and this is not just me from watching film, and, you know, I've watched a ton of it. But this is also the relationships I have in Seattle and with all the coordinators. I've talked to every one of his coordinators that that's ever coached him. I've talked to his head coach. I've talked to people within the organization. There are a bunch of things he doesn't do well. And in Seattle, like, they kept him away from those things. And, you know, one of the issues was the reason he left Seattle is, you know, he wanted Russ to cook. It's his people. Let Russ cook. Let him be a superstar. He needs an MVP. Well, guess what? He doesn't do a bunch of things well, you know, and what kept me, like, I always look at, you know, kind of related to your own career. There are certain things, especially toward the end of my career, that I just wasn't very good at. I had so many knee issues and things that I was not going to be a good gap, you know, puller. I'm just not going to pull on power, counter. Those days were done, but I could still really block in zone. I could still really get off the ball and shorten your neck. And so, you know, I know what I'm good at. I know what I'm not good at. And, well, thankfully, I was in a place where they recognized that and said, hey, man, what we need to do is just focus on this. As a matter of fact, we got to situations where we wanted to run counter or we wanted to run power as an adjunct play to what we normally did. There are times where I just flip sides and I play right guard all of a sudden and let the normal right guard pull on a 16 power. So we just had the point where the coaches are like, yeah, he's not good at that. We're not going to make him do it. but again, you have to embrace that too. And I don't think Russ was ever able to embrace that and ever able to look at what he doesn't do well, which is anticipatory throws, you know, where you're running dagger as a concept in the NFL where the inside receiver, you know, like a 2x2 formation, say the inside slot receiver runs off coverage, runs off the, you know, the deep safety, and the outside receiver runs an 18-yard dig in cutting route. And you're, as a quarterback, man, you got to let that thing eat before that guy comes out of his break. And, you know, I know they just took that play out of Seattle because he wouldn't throw it. And that's a day one installation. They just said, hey, we can't throw this. So he just doesn't do it, or he doesn't see it, or he doesn't feel it. And little things like that, that you have to be able to recognize these things I don't do well. And that stuff is 100%, in my opinion, on Russ.
So I'm asking you to climb inside the brain of George Payton and Sean Payton here a little bit. Mark Schlereth is kind enough to join us here on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. When you, let's say number 12's there, you know, Bo Nix is on the board, Michael Penix is on the board. Do you think Denver still entertains the notion of picking a quarterback at 12 or trading back and picking a quarterback later in the first round? Or do you feel like Zach Wilson gives them a little bit of leeway where they don't have to use a quarterback so high up in the draft?
Yeah. I have thought before they even traded for Zach Wilson, I have been sitting here in Denver on my Stinking Truth podcast. You can catch me there as well. I have said it forever. I think they'll just trade out at 12 if they can. Now, you can't always do it. Like, you can't always trade out, but they need some draft capital. And, like, it would be foolish to sit there at 12, or, like, a lot of people said they're gonna package something together and move up. There's nobody in this draft worth moving up for, I don't believe. I don't believe anybody. And let's face it, if history is any indicator, 75% of these quarterbacks that get drafted, if there's six guys that go in the first round, there'll be one franchise guy out of that group and maybe one starter. And you know, history will tell you that. I mean, 2018 draft class, they were talking about that draft class rivaling the 83 draft class. Let me see, Baker Mayfield's on his fourth team. Sam Darnold's on his fourth team. Josh Rosen's played for six teams and is out of the league. Josh Allen, yes, winner, winner, chicken dinner. And then, you know, I don't really count Lamar because they moved back into the first round of 32 to get him. So, yeah, how'd that go? Or how'd the 2021 class go? Every quarterback in that draft class is now gone, including Zach Wilson, except Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence, the jury's still out. So the odds are every one of these guys is going to have growing pains, is going to fail, and probably won't have success until he finds his next team. So, no, I wouldn't trade up. I think, you know, I look at Pittsburgh as a trade partner at 20. They did that a couple of years ago where Pittsburgh ran up to 10, I believe it was, to get linebacker Bush out of Michigan, and then Denver fell back to 20 and picked up Noah Fant. My numbers might be a little bit off there, but I know those were the guys involved in the trade, Devin Bush and Noah Fant. And they swap those picks. And Denver needs more draft capital. Like right now, you look at the 2018, 2019, and 2020 draft of the Denver Broncos. There is one guy, and that should be the core of your football team. There's one guy that's still on the roster, and that may be questionable, is Courtland Sutton, their wide receiver. They don't have one other person from those drafts on their football team right now, which just goes to show you how bad the drafts have been. So I think that they're going to have to, maneuver that draft, if you will. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them say, hey, if they have to sit at 12 and can't make a move, I think they draft a football player, offensive tackle, maybe a cornerback, some cornerstone position. And then they wait till if they can package a couple third rounders together and move up and get somebody in the second or third round at quarterback.
Hey, Mark, are they ever going to make the Idaho Vandals great again?
They've been pretty, recently they've been good. Ever since they went back to 1AA or whatever you would call that now, FCS or whatever it is, they've been pretty decent the last couple of years under Coach Eck. So I'm pretty excited. I was just out there speaking to the North Idaho Hall of Fame, and that was fun. So that's where they belong. They belong in that next notch down division. And so I'm excited for them. This whole college landscape thing is kind of goofy, with the portal and the fact that if you don't start or some coach coaches you hard and says you're not playing well enough, then you get hurt feelings and you tuck your tail between your legs and you just jump into the portal and leave. I think that's, that scares me for this generation of players. Because I know one thing, man, I never learned anything about myself during the good times because I was too busy patting myself on the back. It's during the tough times where I actually learned, how much grit I could have and how much I could put myself through. So I really fear for the kids because, ultimately, in this day and age, it's, who's going to pay me the most? And if I don't, if I get talked to sternly, I'm leaving. So I just think that's a real issue for college football.
Mark, before we let you go, I wanted to thank you publicly because I was playing with the New Orleans Voodoo back in – I just coming out of the Colts and playing with the Voodoo back in 2004, 2005. You had just wrapped up your career – and you were broadcasting for the AFL, and I got to sit down with you three or four times, and you were a huge influence for me in jumping into sports media, and I've been doing it now 18 years, and your enthusiasm when you sat down with me those few times and your true interest into what I was seeing on a field or what I was dealing with the AFL compared to the NFL, that enthusiasm and excitement really bled over to me, and I've followed in smaller footsteps, but definitely appreciate your take and your interest and your enthusiasm and your excitement for sports radio, man. You are very entertaining, and I've followed you along the way too, and I've absolutely loved you.
Well, I appreciate that. Actually, I'd like to sit here for another 5 minutes and let you keep going because I appreciate that, and I will tell you, man. My dad told me when I was a little boy, find something you love to do and you'll never have to work. And I don't feel like I've worked a day in my life. And I truly do love football, man. It is. There's a line from The Alarm that I always use, an 80s band that I love, The Alarm. And it says, the lifeblood that courses through my veins. And football has been the lifeblood that has coursed through my veins. I know what I know. I know what works. I know what wins championships. And I will let you know about it. And it, tends to irritate a lot of people. But that's okay. That's part of the gig. So, I'll give it to you straight, no chaser. And, if you don't like it, I don't give a crap. So I guess I've earned that right, but I appreciate the kind words and I do love football and regardless of what I'm doing, I just think it's the greatest sport in America or the greatest sport in the world personally. But, I know soccer guy would.
Now, these two guys, we agree with you.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. Hey, I know you got a role, but and we're not holding you to this, but just a projection. Who's your week one starter in Denver at quarterback?
I'm going to go Zach Wilson. And I don't know, even if they take a first rounder, I think there's huge growing pains that are going to be involved in that. And, I went back and watched a couple games, a couple of good games he played. I've seen plenty of the bad games he's played, and he's played some real, you know, dogs. But I went back and looked at some of the good games he's played, and tell you what, accuracy, arm talent, you know, making some anticipatory throws. You know, I like I said, he's as talented, if not, you know, beyond maybe Caleb Williams, maybe Jaden Daniels, who's got more talent than Zach Wilson in this draft. And I would argue that nobody does.
Yeah. Mark, we appreciate it. Pleasure and honor. Keep it rolling, man. We look forward to catching up with you again here down the line sometime.
Thanks, Mark.
Sounds good, guys. Take care anytime.
You got it. Mark Schlereth right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. One of the best offensive linemen to do it and to ever do it.